Today is June 12, 2013, and this is episode number 208 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, karaoke monkey. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you would like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
Sing for me, monkey, sing.
It's so funny. I'm just such a basket full of neuroses, as you well know, Jeff. I can't let myself sing in a karaoke situation. Just can't do it.
You didn't do it?
I did not.
Oh, Brian. Okay, do you remember at Macworld a couple years ago when you couldn't bring yourself to do the drum circle?
Yes.
And then you did it last year?
I did.
And you remember how good you felt? How much fun you had?
Absolutely. I'm a basket of neuroses, man.
Okay, so your goal for next Worldwide Developers Conference is to channel your drum circle self from Macworld into the beard bash for the karaoke singing, so that you get up there and do a song.
I'll try to remember that. And that's what we're talking about. We're talking about Jim Dalrymple and the Loops beard bash, which is a party held during WWDC, where Jim has found this fantastic band of three guys who play for other people to come up and sing.
It's a live karaoke band.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. The developers just eat it up. It's a really, really good time. And Jim Dalrymple, he plays. So last year was the first time he threw this party, and he only played. He said he wouldn't sing, but it was his party, so that we could all f off. And you know, that's fine. This year though, he had the courage to sing as well. So he sang and played guitar with the band, and he was quite good.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
And next year, people are going to get to be wowed with your singing monkey voice.
Which, by the way, this is why I am talking over the party, is why my voice is hammered today.
And if mine sounds a little rough, it's because there's a big forest fire. That's not a danger to me, but it is close by.
It's because you haven't drank your bourbon yet.
I just took a sip.
Ah, excellent.
I just took a sip, ladies.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. So this is clearly Worldwide Developer Conference, or WWDC week, for Apple. Not much to talk about, though, huh?
No, I was really surprised. I thought there might be some kind of announcement. I mean, anything. Yeah. Throw us a bone, Tim. Come on.
We kid, of course, because there were all kinds of things announced, and we are both really, really excited about what we were shown during the WWDC keynote.
Yes, and I think it's safe to say, even without checking anyone's spreadsheet, I owe you a dollar.
Woohoo!
And considering everything that was announced, that's a dollar that I think is well spent.
Why don't we explain what that dollar is for?
The dollar was for you saying that we would see sweeping changes in iOS 7.
Mm-hmm.
And me saying that we would see some big changes, but it wasn't going to be sweeping, and that Apple was going to take us through steps into what the operating system was going to become.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did instead was apparently listen to this show and spent a few days right before WWDC totally working their butts off so that I would owe you a dollar.
Exactly. It was, in fact, a statement upgrade.
I think it was.
I said that Apple was looking to make a statement.
And they made a big statement.
They made a big statement. And to that end, Jeff, above and beyond whether or not iOS 7 had these, you know, the sweeping change, this keynote was very much about Apple making a statement.
I have to agree. From the moment the lights went down and they started with the video,
mm-hmm,
to the very end when the lights went down and they left, it was nonstop statement.
Yeah. And my favorite statement kind of
came from Phil Schiller, didn't it?
It did. Yeah. He said, now I'm going to mess it up. Is it, can't innovate anymore, my ass?
Yes.
Was that the wording?
Yes.
Can't innovate anymore, my ass. Yeah. Yeah. It was just so nice to see. I don't know. There was something about that. You know, on the one hand, they're sort of acknowledging the outside criticism. The outside criticism from, you know, pundits, especially in the last five, six months in particular.
Sure, sure.
Right. I mean, so, you know, it was really interesting seeing Apple acknowledge that, but acknowledge it with this clear declaration of, you know, you don't know what you're talking about. Not just, it wasn't defensive. It was proud. It was a statement. It was a statement.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. When Tim Cook took the stage, he set the tone, and the tone was, hold on, people, because we're going to show you how badass we are.
Right. And we had, Jeff and I didn't plan. We actually wanted to do this particular podcast organically. We didn't want to micro plan it out. But right here, we can mention that there was iOS 7. There was OS 10, 10.9 Mavericks.
Yes.
There were the Mac Pros.
Yeah, and the Mac Pro, the MacBook Air.
And the MacBook Airs.
And I think it's okay to mention the new AirPort Extreme, because even though Apple had to release that because of the other new hardware, I saw some innovation there too. So I think it's okay to throw the AirPort Extreme base station in the mix.
You wrote our coverage up on that, and because it's been so busy, I haven't even read that. So I look forward to hearing what you have to say.
All right.
You want to start?
And
there,
since we didn't script anything, I look forward to hearing what I have to say too.
Awesome.
Sure.
Do you want to start with iOS 7?
Let's get the base station out of the way.
Okay.
And just real quick, the new base station supports 802.11ac, which means that all of the other Wi-Fi standards that we've had up to this point are supported, plus a new Wi-Fi that is being referred to by the industry as gigabit internet, which I think is kind of confusing. So it's like having a crazy fast high-end Ethernet connection that's wireless, and the signal is more robust, so you are able to keep a good connection in more situations.
Wow. What about range? Do we know anything about that yet?
The range, well, I need to go buy one of these because we know how bad my base station is right
now. Yes.
And I do have some range issues. So,
that's what she said.
I'll have another drink.
I couldn't help myself.
Sorry. No, I know. And really, I mean, you had the camera. The deal was you're supposed to be quiet, but I've said too much. Anyhow, so it should have better range, and I went to test one out in real-world conditions, and I have some pretty bad real-world conditions here to test it in.
That is very, very true.
Yes. So they changed the shape. It's a little tower now. It's like 6.5 inches across and almost 10 inches tall. And it's that's actually the size of the new Mac Pro. So yeah, it's smaller than that.
Yeah, it's way smaller than that.
Yeah, so it's this tiny little thing, but it looks like a little tower. And they changed the antennas and the angle of the antennas, so that should help with robustness and the distance that you can get off of it. And it just, the new design, while it's not the flat little slab anymore, I think looks pretty nice. So
excellent. Yeah. So, and this, of course, isn't an Apple invention. This is Apple adopting an industry standard. So other companies will be following suit.
Right.
And we should also acknowledge that I believe that Apple is the first company with a major product supporting this.
To the best of my knowledge, there aren't hardly any 802.11 AC products out there yet.
And of course, the flip side means that if you get the MacBook Air, the new MacBook Air is the first one. Of course, the Mac Pro will have it also, but it doesn't ship for a while. But if you have one of these new MacBook Airs, you're not going to be able to take advantage of the super fast speed anywhere except for where one of these towers exists, which probably means your office and or home.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't expect them in Starbucks anytime soon.
Oh, that's a really good point. And I have a feeling this is, or Starbucks is a really good use.
Well, yeah, case Starbucks, like this. Starbucks's speed is it's a, the choke point is not the wireless routers. The choke point is there is the pipeline into the Starbucks. So it's not going to, you know, it's not really going to help there either, except for peer-to-peer transfers, if that's important to you at a Starbucks. So the bad guys would be able to, you know, like sniff your packets faster.
That's what she said.
Good Lord. We are off to a bad start, Jeff.
Yeah, I know. Story of my life. All right, so there you go. That's a quick rundown of the new base station. And while it may not be as sexy as the other announcements, I think it was worth mentioning because it still shows innovation on Apple's part.
Absolutely. Yeah, Apple has always been fast to support new wireless standards. Generally speaking, ushering them in for the rest of the PC industry in particular to...
Yes. Yes, and Apple has very consistently been, if not first, one of the first companies out with Wi-Fi products that support standards that haven't been fully ratified yet.
Yeah, that's true. Which reminds me, I will just take the opportunity to poke some fun at Michael Dell's expense. Do you remember back in 1998 when Michael Dell claimed that his company Dell was the first company to support Wi-Fi in laptops?
Oh my God, I forgot about that.
It might have been 99, but it's one of those 2 years. And he was right, of course, except that Apple had done it a year before, you know, other than that little nitpicky detail.
Right, because a year before, we got the original iBook, the clamshell or toilet seat iBook, whatever you want to call it, which, by the way, I think is still a really cool design. And Phil Schiller had to jump off of the scaffolding in Moscone into an airbag holding
I forgot about iBook. That. I wasn't at that one.
In his hand. I called it a MacBook Air, didn't I?
I wasn't at that was the last the original Macworld that I didn't go to.
And clearly Michael Dell wasn't at that keynote either.
No. He clearly was not. It's funny. I remember the Dell PR people were fantastic. I called them up and, you know, like, excuse me, what was that? And they're like, well, we'll get back to you. And I didn't expect to hear back from them, but, you know, sure enough, I got a call back.
Like, oh, wow.
20 minutes later, they're like, so, you know, our first laptop was the such and such model. It came out such and such time. And I'm like, yeah, okay. But, you know, the iBook came out at this time and we'll get back to you. And I didn't expect to hear back from him. Got another phone call back.
Oh, wow.
And they ended up calling me back three times trying to clarify. And what they eventually came up with was, well, what he meant was in the Windows space. Yeah. All right. Whatever. They did a wonderful job of trying to cover for their boss.
And you know what they should have done to cover initially was go back and look up the introduction dates for all the different devices and then immediately come back with, and what he really meant was in the Windows space.
Yes. Yes. But I'll give them credit for working with a journalist at an Apple-centric site in the late 90s who was clearly out to make their boss look like the buffoon that he can be sometimes. And they worked with me anyway and got me my questions answered.
That was really nice of them, actually.
I'll contrast that with a certain Apple-centric company whose PR department does not necessarily work on the same principles.
No, they don't. Which is really surprising.
But let's get back to WWDC, because we do have a lot to talk about.
Right. So OS 10 or iOS 7, what do you want to hit next?
Well, let's go with, let's talk about Mavericks first.
Okay. And there you go. That's the first thing. Apple has dumped the cat-themed code names for the products.
They must love that show. I wonder if it's James Garner they're such a fan of.
Well, to be fair, who isn't?
That actually is true. I love James Garner. I just Rockford Files and Maverick are two of my favorite old TV shows. But that's beside the point. We're kidding. Mavericks is actually named after a surfing spot.
Yes, off the coast of California. And so the new naming scheme that Apple is using for OS X does away with cats and is now going to use landmarks in California.
Right. It was Craig Federighi, who is the senior vice president in charge of it's both OS X and OS 9, right?
Well, he doesn't have to do much with OS 9 anymore, actually.
It's both OS 10 and iOS, isn't it?
Yeah.
What am I saying? What am I doing? Yeah. Who am I? iOS. It's both. Okay, let's just rewind that. We'll just delete all that out. So Craig is in charge of both OS 10 and iOS, isn't he?
Yes. Yes, he is. I know, it's our little inside joke. Since we did the edit, no one will know.
Yeah, that's right, excellent. He came out and introduced Mavericks to us, and he quipped that they didn't want to be the first first company in history to have to, or they didn't want OS X to be the first operating system delayed due to a lack of big cats or something to that effect. It's quite funny.
Right. It was funny. And so he says, OS 10, 10.9 will be named Sea Lion.
Sea Lion, yeah.
And I'm laughing. I'm thinking, oh my God, what an incredibly funny joke. And I'm waiting for the real name. And I'm watching Twitter at the same time and immediately started seeing news sites and other people announcing that the next version of OS 10 was Sea Lion and flipping out over the name. And I'm watching this and I'm thinking, Oh, there must be a lack of oxygen in your office. But bless your little hearts. And then he says, no, actually, this is what we're doing, and this one will be called Mavericks. And since I had never heard of Mavericks, and to be fair, I'm not a surfer, what I ended up doing, for those of you playing at home, was I did a little research to figure out what it is. And it's I guess, an amazing surfing spot with really big waves where they crest at 25 feet and higher due to an underwater rock formation. And so there's a surfing competition that happens there every winter. And
there's a movie called Mavericks as well that's based on, it's a documentary.
Yes, yes. And the name came from the dog that followed the surfers out that first really wanted to try out the space.
It's Chasing Mavericks. Is that a documentary? It's a biographical film. Yeah, I didn't want to embarrass myself any more than I already had.
Don't worry, Brian. I do it all the time.
It's the one with Gerard Butler.
Yeah, which I haven't seen, and I remember the name Mavericks was in it, but I can't remember the rest of it.
Yeah, Chasing Mavericks is what that's called. It's all not right. A documentary, but it is telling, it's based on a true story.
Yeah, so there you go. So anyhow, Mavericks ended up being named after the dog because the dog was they left the dog at shore, and he ended up swimming out after everyone. And so they had to put him in like a little raft or on a surfboard or something they had with them so that the dog wouldn't drown while they were out there surfing. And so they started calling the place after the name of their dog, and it stuck. And eventually it changed from Maverick to Mavericks, and that's how it's known today. So in a roundabout way, Apple shifted from naming their operating system after cats to naming it after a dog.
Oh, at least for one version.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, the name aside, and there is art, there's a little kvetching. There's people going, nah, wah, 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 Mavericks, stupid name. But you know what? We had the same thing when Apple released, what was it, Cheetah?
Actually, with every version of OS X that's come out.
Yeah, well, people got used to it to a certain degree.
Yeah, but they would still complain. And this is a little louder than usual, and they'll
adapt.
It's
not any louder than at least... In comparison to Apple's size, it's no louder than people complaining about the cat names when, you know, say, well, surely they're not going to actually call it that, you know, because it was a code name.
It was a code name, but the marketing department loved it, and so it ended up sticking.
Yeah, and I don't. Our point is, ignore the kvetching, because there's always kvetching. You know, every time, well, we'll get to this with the Mac Pro too, but every time Apple makes some kind of big change, there's always some resistance to change, and then we end up embracing it. Most of the time, we end up embracing it mightily.
Right. And I have a feeling I'm going to embrace Mavericks very mightily.
Well, the operating system itself looks wonderful.
It looks so much better. And a lot of the skeuomorphic elements that were very
superfluous.
Wow. We'll just edit that out. People won't know.
Excellent.
Yeah, the gratuitous element points that were in there that were very skeuomorphic, those are gone. But it's really the under-the-hood stuff that has me excited. And the things that they've done to improve battery life, to improve overall performance, it's like they went back in and took all of the complaints that people have had over the years about Apple focusing on eye candy and not on improving the foundation, and went, oh, it's time to improve the foundation. And I think that from what they've shown us, they've done a really good job of that.
I think it's even all that's true, but I think there's more to it. This is the first major OS X upgrade that we've seen that does not focus on the iOSification. Of the operating system that we've seen, in particular, I didn't see anything that was gimping the operating system. To wit,
yes,
like sandboxing, yes. Sandboxing with a mountain lion. Sandboxing is wonderful from a security and stability standpoint, but quite frankly, it is a gimpification of the OS. It makes the OS less usable. For the sake of stability, it's something that I've had a huge problem with since it was introduced. It's something that we've talked about repeatedly at the Mac Observer, and it's something that I personally blamed on Scott Forstall. That I felt Scott Forstall was wanting to, you know, bring that same sort of rigid control that makes sense for iOS that does not make sense for our computers, and sure enough, we get Mavericks, and it doesn't have that same inhibiting. It's like nothing that I was shown seemed to be intended to limit my control over my Mac.
I agree, and many of the little details that they showed us made me just smile, because I was looking at the features and thinking, okay, these are now features that are designed to enhance my experience, to handle routine things for me, and just make my life easier. And as an example, the new Calendars app,
mm-hmm.
It links into a new application they're adding to OS X, which is a Maps app.
Mm-hmm.
So when I set an appointment that's not here in my office, it knows the location, because of course I'll put in the location of where I'm going. It figures out the route and how long it's going to take, and will pad that time into my appointment so that I know when to leave to get where I need to go.
Right.
And for a lot of people, they'll be like, yeah, whatever. But
well, that's similar to Google Now.
Yes. Yes. And it's at the system level, like Google Now is for Android. Mm-hmm. And it's just one of those features that when they showed it, I was like, oh, thank you, because you probably, over the course of a year, just saved me hours of time in setting up searches for where I'm going and figuring out directions for time and all that.
Yeah,
it's just done now.
It certainly makes it's another tool in the quiver or tool in the quiver. What?
No, it's okay. Go ahead and mix your metaphors.
I don't even know what that's supposed to mean. It's another toolbox in the truck yard. It's okay. I'll stop.
It's another arrow in the bandwagon.
It is another way for people to actually use Calendar in a useful way. It's added incentive to actually use this stuff. And for someone like me, who is terribly unorganized and does not use calendars very well, I'm kind of excited about it. There's one thing Dave Hamilton, president of TMO here and the co-host of the Mac Geek Gab, noted that Finder tagging is a little bit of iOSification in that it is a way of removing us from the file system.
In one sense, yes. But on the other hand, a lot of us have been using metadata that we're adding to our files ourselves for organizing documents for quite a while.
Right. Let's tell them what Finder tagging actually does.
Okay. So Finder tagging, what it does is it adds extra little bits of information to the files that you're making. And so think of them as like categories that you're creating. And so if you have something that's like current project or family, and you're working on documents that you want to make sure are always grouped in that way, when you save the file, you add that tag. And then that tag is searchable. Just like in iTunes, when you add extra information to your songs, or if you're using something like Mail Tags, which is an add-on for Apple's Mail application, it's actually like exactly the same as that. And for someone like me that wants their computer to organize files for them, this is a godsend, because I use Smart Folders to manage all of my information. And with Maverick, it will become magnitudes of order easier for me to do that.
You want to put a X on the end of that?
No, I'm going to leave it like that, the X that you just did.
Uh-huh.
I want you to splice yours onto the end of what I just said, because it'll be really natural.
Excellent. So more specifically, by applying a Finder tag to a file when you save it, you can then access all files with that tag in a very easy way, directly from a Finder window. And so Dave's point was that this is a way of, in other words, it doesn't matter where it is on your hard drive. It doesn't even matter where it is on iCloud. It can be on your hard drive or iCloud and or on iCloud.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll be able to quickly see everything that you've tagged with the same tag. And you can make up your own tags. You can color coordinate them and do stuff like that. Dave's point was that this is a way of sort of abstracting the file system from the user. And he is entirely correct. It is a way of abstracting the file system from the user, but it is done in a way that enhances usage rather than inhibits usage. And that's what we've seen for the last two, for Lion and Mountain Lion. We were seeing some iOSification features that were inhibiting our use of our Macs, that were limiting us. And that was a real concern for me, and we did not see anything like that in this demonstration of Mavericks, and I'm so excited about it. Now, other features you mentioned, there's going to be a Maps app. To me, Apple needs to put Maps in the browser. Apple needs to let the world have access to Maps app, to its mapping service, so that it can start accumulating data to not only make maps better, but also to, if we sign off on it, to let them use that information about us for things like a Google Now competitor.
You know, that may be coming.
It probably will.
Yeah, I mean, Apple has taken that product from iOS and now migrated it to the Mac. So it's not that big of a step to go from there into a browser, so it's available on any platform.
It shouldn't be, at the very least, and I'm hoping that that's coming, but I am happy to see it move to the Mac at the least. Yes. I'm personally okay with it being a standalone app. I think that there are some people who would prefer to be able to access it from a browser, just like they can with Google Maps, just like they can with every single other mapping service. Mm-hmm. But, you know, baby steps, and I will take this particular baby step as a fantastic one, and I'm really excited about it.
I am too. It also addresses something I've been begging for years, which is the ability to search for a location in Maps on my Mac, get all the information I need about it, and then just push it to my iPhone.
Yeah.
And it does that.
Right. And there's already so many things that we can already do with that. Like one of the things I just love is being able to add someone to address book on my Mac. And like, you know, a restaurant or a business that I'm going to for a meeting, right? And just being able to plop that into address book, and without even thinking about it, by the time I get to my car, it will have been pushed to my phone, and I can look up the address there, get directions, and you know, without having to do anything else. I love that. I've always loved that. Apple does that better than everybody else. This amps that up a little bit.
Yes.
The Maps integration, that is.
Yeah, the integration that Apple is creating between all of their products is making me very happy.
Yes. To wit, iBooks. It has driven me nuts that iBooks is not available on the Mac. And with Mavericks, it finally will be. So while it's not that I want to be able to read my... Actually, the funny thing is, it's not because I want to read my books on my Mac. I love reading my books on my iPad. But there are times when I want to do some research in a book. And that I would rather do on my Mac, especially if it's related to anything that I'm writing. So I'm glad that we're finally getting that. What took so long is beyond me. Why we've had iBooks on iOS for, 3 years now?
I have an idea on that.
Do tell.
My idea is that that some people within Apple felt that by bringing iBooks to the Mac, that it would dilute iPad sales. And
by which you mean Scott Forstall?
And so Scott Forstall was a champion, I think, for man, you just saw right through that.
I did.
So I think Scott Forstall was a champion for keeping iBooks on the iPad and iPhone only.
Yeah, I think he wanted. I don't know. I have no direct evidence of this. I'm totally projecting, but I think that he wanted to artificially make iOS more exclusive than it needed to be.
I think that's exactly what happened, and now with him gone, and Tim Cook running his company and not Steve Jobs' company, we can see things like doing the smart thing, bringing iBooks to the Mac.
Right. Yeah. Speaking of Mr. Forstall.
Man, did they beg on him indirectly a lot or what?
Oh, man. Oh, and then some, right? I mean, so the first thing was when we're looking at the new calendar app, which has a lot of new enhancements. He said something to the effect of, "Hey, look at that! It stays there without any stitching."
Yes,
except he said it was much funnier.
Yes, it was something about. Well, he said something to that effect, and he also said something along the lines of, "No digital leather was harmed in the making of this interface."
Yeah, no cows were harmed.
Yes,
no cows were harmed, referring to the leather. The stitching, of course, he was basically saying that the window stayed where it was supposed to, with, you know, without the stitching holding it in place. They kept bagging on the skeuomorphism. When we got to Game Center in iOS, he said we just completely ran out of felt.
Uh-huh.
Which, you know, thank goodness, that was the single ugliest interface that Apple has ever made, was Game Center, the current Game Center.
Yeah, and it was also confusing. I had Game Center for quite a while before I realized that parts of the interface were actually buttons.
Ah, huh, interesting.
Yeah.
And he said that we also ran out of wood, so the iOS 7 should be good for the environment. There was just all kinds of bagging on skeuomorphism, and I could be projecting. Maybe there's no ill will whatsoever between these guys and Scott Forstall, but I felt that those were all slams aimed at Mr. Forstall.
I think they were slams aimed at Scott, but I think Apple just as a whole was lightheartedly poking at themselves and acknowledging the complaints that people had about some of the directions they took. And they were letting us know, yep, we listen. It's okay.
Yeah, that's it's possible. And maybe even it's likely. I mean, you know, Apple has always had a lot of class, so maybe that was aimed at the skeuomorphism and not at the supposed champion of that skeuomorphism. You know,
yeah. So be it. Well, you know, and Steve Jobs even gave a jab at Apple himself when iCloud was introduced, because he said, now, why should you trust us to make a cloud service that you can use? After all, we're the people that brought you Mobile Me. And so I can see Apple still poking at themselves,
right,
acknowledging the issues that
right,
people complain about. Yeah.
Well, yeah, speaking of one of those, it's funny, people like to bag on Mobile Me, but the things that Mobile Me did pretty well, for instance, syncing your contacts and calendars, it did that really well. It also synced your keychain between multiple Macs, and it did that really well, really, really well. And these are features that we don't have. I'm sorry, we certainly had the syncing. And as a matter of fact, we had the syncing between Macs and iOS devices for calendar and address book.
But not keychain.
And now we are finally getting that with iCloud keychain.
Yes. And when I saw the feature, I had two thoughts almost simultaneously. The first one was, oh, this is really great because I know so many people that don't actually practice safe password construction or management. And then my second thought was, oh, 1Password. Oh.
Yeah.
But I'm not worried about 1Password anymore because I had time to think it through. And while the ability to use Safari to have something that's integrated that can create a password for you, save it to a database, and then autofill it for you when you need it, which is something 1Password does. Yeah, that's great. But 1Password does so much more.
Well, it's multi-browser.
Exactly.
Compatible for one thing.
Yeah, and iCloud Keychain is for Safari.
It's for Safari. But there's more than that. iCloud Keychain is going to greatly enhance the convenience for people who are not already using a product like 1Password.
Yes, and I see iCloud Keychain along the same lines as Shortcuts, meaning the expandable snippets, because Text Expander does that, but it does so much more. Text Expander wasn't killed. And then Time Machine, because Time Machine handles backups, but for people that want serious backups, well, they're still going out and buying stuff like ProSoft Engineering's Backup and there's a bunch of them that are really good products out there. And those products didn't go away just because Time Machine came out.
All right. We're going to run out of time if we don't scoot along to iOS 7. So let's mention the fact that there's Tab Finder windows,
Which I love.
Yep, that should be great. Notifications are being improved. There's a lot more functionality with notifications.
Hooray.
Yeah, fantastic. Really exciting. There's a bunch of changes with Safari. They're really looking at Safari in new ways for both iOS and OS X. That's exciting. There's a bunch of performance stuff. There's the AppNap, which allows apps to use less processor in the background, although there's an API.
Yeah, for properly managing that. Yep.
Right. There's that developers can tap into to make sure that important apps can still use all the processors they need. There's accelerated scrolling. There's the timer coalescing. They're doing OpenGL 4, which is great for gaming and for some other applications. And idle hygiene. And we'll just leave that one alone.
Yeah. Well, there's so much we could do with that. How about if we say that your Mac will now be able to handle the time between system calls happening more efficiently, and then we can dive into it more later. Or maybe we'll leave that one for Mac Geek Gab.
Yeah. Well, that's probably more their bailiwick. So yeah. Let's move on to iOS 7, which is this major overhaul. Tim Cook called it the like the most important the biggest change. I forget exactly how he put it.
It was the most important thing for the iPhone since the introduction of the iPhone.
Yeah.
And I'm paraphrasing, but that was the message.
And I agree with that. It is, as we discussed at the top of the show, this is a statement update. This is, everything is being rethunk.
Yes.
That's a technical term.
Yes, rethink. Actually it is. Google it, people. It's there.
Yeah, it's there. Actually, it probably
now,
is.
When I saw a lot of the elements during the keynote presentation, I was thinking, okay, I see where Apple is going, and this is cool, but I can also see where there are parts that people are going to look at and go, oh, Apple's a copycat, they're not innovating, they're just stealing from Android. And
we've got a different opinion on that.
Yeah, well, okay, so I don't personally feel that Apple has stolen the interface elements from other platforms.
Well, there's one thing that they did, and that's the control center. We'll get to that. Let's save this analysis after we talk about the stuff.
Okay.
For one thing, we've got – let's start with the look and feel. We've got these flatter – it's not black and white and flat all over, but it's definitely flat.
Yes.
And the icons themselves have all been sort of – simplified, and you know, fewer gradients, more just, you know, straight colors with a lack of detail on the you know, image elements that are on the icons. This is the one thing that I've got resistance to change on. They look a little bit cartoony to me.
Yeah, I will agree.
But I'm totally willing to. Even if I hate it, I will take it for all the other stuff that comes with iOS 7. But
yeah,
I'm willing to give it a chance of using it to see if I can't come to embrace the new icon look too.
You know, having the opportunity to have looked at a lot of these icons more closely, I am more open to them now than I was on Monday when we first saw them.
Sure.
But it's one of those things where it's such, at least for me, such a shocking change. It's taken a little bit of time to start adapting to the new look.
Right. But I think we're both willing to give that a shot. Again, I'll just acknowledge that this is my biggest change resistance aspect to this OS. So, of course, we have lost all of the skeuomorphism. It's just gone.
We have lost all of the gratuitous skeuomorphism.
Yes.
There are still skeuomorphic elements there, but they look to me to be skeuomorphic elements that are necessary to understand what the application is or does.
Okay.
Whereas before, we had skeuomorphic elements like leather and stitching everywhere or tape reels that were just there as ornamentation. That ornamental stuff that we didn't need is gone.
Right. It's gone. And we've got the addition of layering to the interface. This is kind of similar to, and by kind of, I mean a lot similar to Yahoo's weather app.
Mm-hmm.
The Apple's new weather app looks a lot like the Yahoo weather app that was introduced a few weeks ago that I personally loved. And it does more. There's like more animations. There's more information and everything. But some of the stuff is like really, really similar. The font's even similar. I wonder how much of this was Yahoo developing this with Apple's future and, you know, it already knowing what Apple was going to be doing. Right. So in other words, Apple letting them do it or how much it's a coincidence. I don't think for even a second that it was copied from the Yahoo app because they haven't had enough time. It was
right.
It was either coincidental or Apple was working with them on making that happen in the first place.
I think a lot of it was coincidental because at the base level, I mean, there's so many similarities, but in the Yahoo app, it's using images from Flickr to convey the feeling of what the weather is wherever you are.
Yeah, I'm talking more about the arrangement and the font and the organization. Rather than
rather
than the image selection, because you're right. I mean, that is actually something that they're continuing to do with that in a good way,
right? But yes, that they do look very similar.
And so we have this layering where when you'll bring up some kind of controls, and they're sitting on top, and there's stuff still in the background that has been blurred out. And that's what we mean by layering, and it adds a sense of depth to the to the look and feel of the OS, and that enhances usability because it very clearly separates what you're doing from what you're not doing while not having to hide what you're not doing.
I had to process that one in my head for a moment, and now I can say yes, you're right.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that's very similar to what Yahoo is doing with its weather app. When you slide when you open up that Yahoo weather app, you get the temperature, you get a gorgeous image, you get some basic information. But if you slide up the basic information to get more information, the image blurs and then sits behind the information panel. And that's something that Apple is doing throughout iOS 7.
Right. Yeah, it's through the whole interface. You're right.
Apple also added multitasking, or enhanced multitasking, I should say. So apps can run in the background. There's an API that apps can tap, can embed into their apps to allow them to run in the background. And what that means is that Apple has final say-so over which apps can do this because Apple does approve its apps. And why is that important, you may be asking?
Brian, why is that important?
That's important for battery life. Apple's take on multitasking, the reason why right now apps go into a stasis state when they're not in the foreground, according to Apple, is to preserve battery life. And true enough, iOS devices have best-in-class battery life and real-world performance. Situations. Android devices where apps can just run freely in the background tend to eat through batteries. It's a fact. Of course, at the same time, there you get some enhanced usability from being able to have apps running in the background. That's a good thing too. This is not a black and white issue. Apple has erred towards the side of battery life. Well, with a new way of doing multitasking, you can have your app running in the background, but it's only through using an API, which means that Apple can kick it out if they don't like the way you're doing it or if they don't like the things that are being done in the background.
Right. And it forces your app to play nicely with the other apps need that background processing time.
Yes, it does. So this to me is the best of both worlds. It's a way of It's a way of enhancing our usability while still preserving the excellent battery life that we all want on our mobile devices.
Yes.
And with this, Apple gave us a new way of thumbing through the running apps.
And I like it better.
Why don't you tell us about it?
Okay. So what everyone's familiar with right now, you double tap the home button and you get the app bar that slides up from the bottom and you flick through that to find the app that you're looking for.
You're flicking through the icons only.
Yes, flicking through the icons only. What happens now when that bar comes up, the apps that are running will also appear in the space above. So it's actually using the whole screen now.
It's using more of the screen. Because there's a bunch of space above and below that's not being used. That doesn't need to be used. So it's like it's the middle. Yeah. It's the middle two thirds of the screen. I'm looking at the screenshot.
Okay, I know why I was thinking of it in a different way, and we don't need to go into that right now. So instead, I'll say you get to see a screenshot of whatever apps are running as well.
Right.
So as you're scrolling through, you get two options for the way you're viewing everything. When you see an app that you want to run, you just tap on it. Or whatever app you want to have in the foreground, just tap on it.
Right.
And if you don't want that app running anymore, you just put your finger on the app's preview and flick up and it goes away.
It kills it.
Yeah.
It kills it. Which is fantastic. That's a great use of gestures. And of course you get the icon view as well. And you also, it's really interesting, the window view and seeing the active window for each app shows the previous app, the app you're looking at, and the next app. You get a little preview. But the icon view actually gives you a little more information. You get the icon for the previous and the next and the current, but then you also get just a little bit of icon for the ones on either side of that too. So you get kind of a better idea of what's coming without making the windows so small that you can't tell what they are.
Yeah, it's a very clever use of screen space.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely it is. Yeah. Photos got a lot of photos got a lot of love. There's
oh boy, howdy.
There's all sorts of both viewing options and organization options that we didn't have before.
Yes, and some of those organization options are automated, much like they are in iPhoto on the Mac, which I think is great because I have so many photos on my iPhone at any given time that it is actually really difficult to search through them to find what I'm looking for.
Right. It'll do.
This will make it much easier.
Collections and moments. These are both automatic ways of grouping your photos by time and place, really.
Yes.
And so you can quickly, you know, do you remember that? I hadn't really thought about this. Do you remember that that OS that was talked about probably 10 years ago? It was a file system concept where your files were organized not by place but by time. So that
that sounds vaguely familiar.
The object was this was a guy who I'm going to try to make this short. It was being led by a guy who had a particular way of thinking, and he wanted a file system that worked with the way he thought. So you're looking for a document and you know that you wrote it right after your anniversary or right after your birthday, or it was Christmas time. So, and so all of your documents are arranged by time. They're not arranged by where they sit on your hard drive. And as an additional option, it's possibly nifty for some folks, but I personally think it's impractical. And sure enough, it didn't take off. You know, it was an open source project, and it just never took off. But this is kind of similar to that, and I think it makes a lot more sense when it comes to images, because you've got the location-based images and then you've got your time-based images too.
Right, and people say things like, do you have the photos from Christmas or from the anniversary or whatever it is?
Right, Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. So it's a way of very quickly browsing your photos. And Apple also gave us an annual view where these you get these little tiny, tiny thumbnails of all the images that you took in, you know, in, you know, 2012. But what you can do is you can tap. What was it? Tap.
You slide your finger over them and you get a bigger thumbnail.
It was no. There was a. Oh, there was a tap. Tap and hold. Tap and hold and slide.
Yeah.
Scrub. Tap. Like tap that. And tap and scrub. Tap and scrub is what they called it.
Okay.
Which was I've got it right here. Tap and scrub is what they call it. So you tap, and then by moving your finger, you're still holding your finger on the screen. By moving your finger around, you can basically go look at all. You can see all of the whatever images below your finger, and so it makes a very, very quick way of browsing this enormous collection of images. I'll be interested to see if people actually use that, because they may not. This may be one of those things that seems nifty, but no one actually uses.
I have a feeling I'm going to be using this.
Yeah. Yeah, you probably will. You take a lot of photographs.
I do. And especially like when we're at conferences.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing for me, when I'm scrolling through my long list of photos, I'm often looking just for color themes because I remember what the colors were like at a certain booth or something.
Right.
And with those tiny little images, that's all I'm going to have are the colors. So I can be scrolling through and go, oh, red. So that's in the area that I want. Now I tap and scrub, and I can find the image that I'm looking for.
Right. And we've got some good pictures in our iOS write-up. It's a mixture of screenshots that Apple posted on its site and then some screen grabs that we did from the keynote that kind of show you the stuff. And so other things that were added with photos, there's going to be filters. This is similar to Instagram and every other digital, every other camera app that's on the App Store. I don't think Apple's breaking any ground there. It just kind of makes it more convenient. It's going to make the third party camera app makers have to step up their game a little bit.
And I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I am too. Because I am too. I'm totally okay. Safari got a lot of enhancements. There's a new tabbed viewer, controls, the top toolbar disappears when you scroll down, so that all of the screen can be used for reading. I want to use the new Safari before I have a really strong opinion about it. But what they showed us looked great.
I think you're going to like it. Based on what I've been able to see, I have.
Yeah,
for me to say that is saying quite a bit because I'm not a Safari fan.
Siri is getting changes, right? Siri's getting both.
I'm very excited about the Siri changes.
There's an interface change that makes it a lot more clear when she's listening to you. And then, of course, we have this layered this layered interface issue where makes it easier to get the information that she's sending back. She's got new voices, and there's hooks for Siri is going to be able to dig into Twitter. The Apple worked with Twitter for that, and of course the big change is that Siri is now doing its searches through Bing.
Yeah, so Safari searches are by default Google,
mm-hmm.
but Siri searches are all Bing.
Yeah. Now you can do. You can still. We should probably do a quick tip on this. You can say search Google for. In order to to have her search Google, but by default she's searching Bing. I'm not keen on that. I think that Google has the better search engine.
I agree.
But if Microsoft is giving Apple better hooks into their search engine, let's say that Google was unwilling, you know, for competitive reasons, didn't want Siri to have the best hooks into Google, into the search engine, that would be a very compelling usage reason to make the switch. I hope this wasn't a situation where Apple is making this change for competitive reasons, because I think that this is a situation where end user usability trumps competitive issues.
You know, I do have that same concern, but I'm wondering if this was more about being easier to hook deep into the Bing search engine as opposed to the Google search engine.
Yeah, and if from a competitive standpoint, it is in Google's best interests to not give Apple the best hooks into its search engine. For the same reasons, it is in Microsoft's interest to do so. Because Microsoft wants that share. Microsoft wants that user data. So, I mean, there's all kinds of reasons why this could have happened. If we get better searches because Apple has better access to the search engine, it'll be a good thing.
I agree. And in the end, what's good for us as end users is what makes me happy.
Yeah. And Siri can also check, can search in Wikipedia. So that's a good thing.
Right. Yes.
That is a very good thing. Now, the big thing that was a direct ripoff of Android is Control Center.
You know, I disagree with you completely.
What?
Yeah.
Okay. That's fascinating. Do tell.
I know, I didn't say this to you before the show simply so that I could get that reaction out of you. All right. So the deal is the Control Center feature first appeared as a jailbreak for iOS.
Oh.
Android grabbed it.
From the jailbroken iOS.
Right. And Apple has now grabbed it. So really, it's a ripoff from the jailbreak community.
From the iOS jailbreak community.
From the iOS jailbreak community.
As opposed to the Android rooting community.
Yes.
It's roughly the same thing, but whatever.
Yeah, same thing, different platforms.
Different nomenclature. Yeah. Okay, well, that is actually good to know because that's good to know. That's good to know because, A, it's the truth, and B, it's good to know from a philosophical standpoint.
Sure, and yeah. And of course, the general public will go, oh, geez, look, Apple totally just ripped off
Android. Yeah, because Android embraced it as a platform much earlier than Apple and therefore spread it. Far and wide. It was, you know, much more common on Android than it was. You know, there are far more Android devices than there are jailbroken iOS devices.
Right.
But nonetheless, I didn't realize that. That's good. So then I don't, you know, you said, let's get back to this analysis bit, because you said that you think that there are things that people will say is ripped off from Android. If it's not the Control Center, what are you talking about?
It's on a more superficial level. If you look at a lot of the icons that Apple has created, people will see those and go, that's really Android. When they look at the notification center, they will see elements that they feel come straight from Android.
Yeah, that is true. Apple is definitely borrowing everything that I thought they were doing with the Control Center. They are certainly doing with a notification center.
Yeah, and I will agree with you completely there. Some of the typefaces that Apple has chosen to use in iOS 7 do look similar to typefaces that you will see when you pick up, say, a Samsung Galaxy S3.
Huh. I have a Galaxy S4 here, and the interface is a thing that does not impress me.
I understand. I have tried so hard to get really excited about Android interfacing because there are so many options for what you can do and there's so much potential. And I end up walking away in frustration every time. So I don't see that Apple has ripped off the Android interface.
I don't think that they're ripping off the Android interface, and I sure as heck don't think that they're ripping off the TouchWiz interface. There are the elements in particular, the continued evolution of Apple's Notification Center, which is borrowed heavily from both the iOS jailbreak community and Android.
Right.
Right. But other than that, I don't think that there's a thing that can be labeled as ripping Android off.
I agree. However, there will be lots of people that will say that there are.
Yeah, I suppose. But now we should mention, by the way, the Notification Center continues to gain functionality in iOS 7. It's still not Google Now, but they are making incremental steps towards that.
True.
And that thrills me to death in that, again, I think that Google Now is an incredible app, and that it, particularly on the Android side because of its system level integration, and that it is a competitive edge for Google in the smartphone, in the smartphone. What do you call those things?
Let's call them smartphones.
Right. The smartphone wars. And Apple is narrowing that gap, but it's still not narrowed. It's narrower, but it hasn't been narrowed.
The gap has not been closed.
It has not been closed, right. But, yeah, good stuff in Notification Center. iOS 7, man, I tweeted iOS 7 is the sex, and I stand by that. I am super stoked about it.
I am really excited about it as well, and there are a few elements that I'm a little bit skeptical about, but that's okay, because if I was just blindly rushing in saying everything is awesome, then I think that would be cause for concern.
Yes.
Yeah, but overall, I'm really excited about the direction Apple is taking with iOS 7 and OS 10.
Well, in the show notes, we'll have a link to Dave Hamilton wrote a piece for us this morning. Comparing the looking at the inconsistent use of icons in Apple's own software in iOS 7.
Yes, and that's one of the things that really jumped out at me and has me worried.
I assume, you know, I'm going to be honest, I assume that'll be fixed in either 7.01 or 7.1. I think that, I mean, you know, we have, there's been, this is not making excuses, this is just looking at reality. This has been done. iOS 7 has been remade in 8 freaking months.
That's true, because what they have today is not something that on a fundamental level could have come from Scott Forstall, because he had his own path that he was taking. Yeah. Clearly, it wasn't the path that Tim Cook thought they should be going in. And so I'm sure a lot of what he did is there, but there had to be a crazy amount of stuff that had to be thrown out and started over.
Yeah.
Once he was gone.
And they've done that in 8 months. So the fact that this is the only inconsistent thing that at least that we've seen so far is that read Dave's article that we've got in the show notes.
It's a good piece.
Yeah, it's a really good piece, and he makes some fantastic points. But the fact that that's really the only inconsistency is quite stunning to me. But I think that some of that stuff may be fixed by the time iOS 7 ships, but I think that they'll have the rest of it fixed in, you know, either 7.01 or 7.02, or more likely 7.1, which will, you know, be 3 months later.
Right. And what I would like to think is that the Apple team knows that these issues are there, and with developers pointing it out now, that they will be jumping in and fixing a lot of these little details right away, because Johnny Ive is a details guy.
Right. Oh yeah, absolutely, massively so. All right, listen, we've already gone over, but we have to mention the MacBook Airs.
And very briefly, the Mac Pro.
Oh, good Lord. Are you kidding? We didn't even get to the Mac Pro yet?
Yeah.
Oh,
but,
man.
But I think we're very focused guys. I mean, clearly, look at the rest of the show. So we can do this quickly. I believe in us.
I don't. MacBook Airs, I was really hoping for Retina displays. I didn't have
any. I would have been shocked to see a Retina display, but it would have been nice.
You would have been the correct one. But I am really, really, really excited about this notion of 12 hours of battery life. Figured that's going to be 9 hours of battery life with real-world experience, especially after about 6 months.
Yes, but then when Maverick comes out, it'll bump up some.
That's true. It should. And that's just such the marvelous battery life. You know, when I go into a Starbucks, and all the PCs have got, you know, they're jacked into the walls.
All the time.
You know, they have to be. And most, the vast majority, like, all, I mean, it's rare that I see anyone with a MacBook Air in particular who ever plugs in at a Starbucks. But, I mean, you know, definitely won't need to be seeing that very much. And that, it's a little tiny thing, but it's pretty cool. Other than that, there's not, you know, the faster processors, the better graphics performance is all good stuff.
A new interface for the SSD that is faster.
Yeah, right. That is important too. I don't think this is an update to make everybody who got one in 2011 think that they have to get one now. Just as a point in time.
But it's
certainly a compelling reason to get one if you were thinking about getting one in the first place. These new ones look great. So that's good.
So I have the first Thunderbolt MacBook Air sitting on my desk. If that was my primary machine, I would upgrade to this new model now. But since the Air isn't my primary machine, I don't feel compelled to rush out and get one
right,
of those.
Exactly.
But it's still a really nice machine.
It's a nice machine. It's an iterative change. It's not any kind of revolutionary thing. Like, for instance, the Mac Pro. Look at that.
See, we're doing really good at staying focused.
And that's a segue that actually makes sense for change.
Well, you know, it was bound to happen eventually. Put monkeys at the typewriter,
that's
and
right.
Eventually we'll come up with a good segue. All right, so the new Mac Pro, totally different design, and only one moving part. And that's a fan.
A single fan. They cool this thing with a single fan. So this is, if you've been living under a rock for the last couple of days, we have all kinds of coverage. We'll have all kinds of coverage in the show notes. Long story short, this thing is 9.9 inches tall, 6.6 inches wide. It occupies an eighth of the volume of the aluminum Mac Pros that are currently on the market.
And it's a cylinder.
It looks sexy. It is so cool. Now, that size means that everything, all your expansion is external. And they're going to be doing it through six Thunderbolt 2 ports and four USB ports. So if you have to have PCI cards, you're going to have to do it through a breakout box.
Right. And for some people, it's important that those six Thunderbolt 2 ports are broken up across three separate buses.
Right, yeah. So that's real performance there. That's real performance. I think John's working on a detailed look at the tech aspects of the Thunderbolt 2 for us. So that's not ready as of this recording. If you are going to add storage, it's going to have to be external. There appears to be only one SSD slot on this device.
Right, and it's PCIe, which is what they have on the new MacBook Air. So that's faster.
Much, much faster. 2.5 times faster than the SATA-based SSD interfaces, and, of course, 10 times faster than what you're going to get out of a hard drive with the SATA interface.
And dual high-end graphics cards built in. And what is it, four 4K displays that can run simultaneously?
You can run
is
up to
right?
three.
Three, okay.
But I think you can push, was it 16? It's an insane number of non-4K displays. And by 4K, we're talking about the ultra-high resolution standard that's emerging.
Right, right.
For display. I don't even think... Well, I don't know. There may be some 4K displays out there. If so, I haven't seen them.
I haven't seen 4K displays, but I have seen 4K TVs.
I'm assuming that Apple will be releasing a 4K display.
I think that's a pretty safe bet.
The cinema display should be either moving to 4K or getting that addition. But that also means you can't change those video cards. Now, you can add a video card. This is applying mainly to the workstation level of video people or some scientific applications that need even higher end cards, especially after a year or two has elapsed and there's more advances. I mean, these are workstation class AMD Fire Pros with up to 6 gigs of VRAM per card, right?
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's going to be far more than enough for almost everybody that would normally buy a Mac Pro. But for those specialized high-end uses, if you need a different kind of graphic card, you're going to have to do it through a breakout box through that Thunderbolt 2 interface.
And I'm curious to see what sort of performance people get when doing that, because – they should be able to get some crazy good throughput on Thunderbolt 2.
Yeah, it should work. I don't know that I saw one of our commenters was saying that Thunderbolt 2 is not as fast as the PCIe Generation 3 spec. And I haven't had the chance to research that. That's one of the things that John's going to be looking at for us. I assume that he's right, to be honest. But the point is, whether or not it's as fast, it remains to be seen if it's fast enough. But keep in mind that most people who own Mac Pros, even most people who own Mac Pros, don't ever use the PCI expansion slots that they have available to them in the first place. That's why That's Apple true. Has done this. I mean, there are some specialized cases where this is going to be less convenient for some folks, but for the vast majority of Apple's Mac Pro customers, this is what they need.
Yeah, and of course there will be a vocal group that will go on about how pissed off they are.
Yeah,
but you know,
change resistance.
Yeah, it's. In the long run, it's okay. It's like when Apple did their sweeping changes to Final Cut Pro 10.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but they messed that up.
They did, but I think they were stuck. That they had no other way to move forward when they needed to move forward. So they had to roll out a hobbled product. But they fixed it. And they've continued to improve it. And it was scary for a little while.
Right.
I don't think the new Mac Pro will be scary like that.
No, not at all.
But I think that there will be a lot of professional users that are going to look at this and think, I have to buy a PC now. And some of them will, but others will they'll realize, actually, no, this is pretty cool and this will do everything.
Yeah, and when it's so quiet and when it's so much smaller. I mean, like I said, the vast majority, if you were the exception, if you were in that minority where this doesn't apply, I totally feel your pain. But for the vast majority of Apple's pro customers, this device is the bee's knees. It is mm-hmm. absolutely what we need. And I think that for the vast majority of those who that are in that tiny minority. Does that make sense? Right?
It does if I stop and think about it. So continue.
Even most of the people that for whom this is not the right enclosure, most of them will have a very satisfactory solution of using external breakout boxes and external storage. And right. So on the whole, this is a good move, especially if the price point warrants it. I'm really hoping this thing starts at $2,000 or below for a 4 or 6 core device. I don't know if that's possible. I don't know if that's possible from the video card and the processor standpoint, because
I would be surprised if it was priced in that range. It would be awesome, but I would be very surprised.
I think Apple can do it. I at least I hope that they can do it, and we will see. If so, this is going to be a pretty popular. This will probably be the most popular Pro device that Apple has had in the last 10 years.
If they could come in with their base model at $19.99, that would be insane. Yeah,
$17.99. I'd like to see $17.99.
I'm just being greedy. I know. I just can't imagine. My guess is the very lowest end model is going to be $24.99.
I think that's what they're currently priced at. And you might wonder, and the reason why they would have to do that with these new devices is because these 6 gigs of VRAM in a video card is a lot. It's expensive. These Fire Pros are not cheap. These processors from Intel, these Xeon E5 processors are not cheap.
And that SSD is not cheap.
That SSD is, yeah. Well, yeah. It's true. The SSD is not cheap. It's true. So anyway, I think we're both in agreement. This is an exciting development for a desktop machine.
Yes, absolutely.
Can't wait for it to be released. I really, really want one, especially as my 2008 tower is showing some signs of age.
this is going to be such an awesome upgrade for you.
Yes.
And getting your current Mac Pro out of your setup, it's also going to free up so much space for you.
Well, I've got my sort of. I'm because I'm going to want to put this thing on my desk.
Right now, my
tower is under my desk.
Yeah, and just think of all that extra room to spread out your legs.
My desk is so big. You see my desk. I know. I know you're being silly.
Yes.
I think it would be really inappropriate for me to sit that way. That's what she said. All right. We have gone over. This is just, let's just cut our losses while we can. This is a long show. This is the longest show we've ever done.
I doubt that, but it's probably pretty close. All right. So on that note, how about if I take us out?
Please.
And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to add, comment on, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. Thanks for listening, and feel free to follow me on Twitter and app.net. I'm Jay Gamut, both places.
And you can follow me on Twitter at TM O'Brien. I'm on app.net at Brian Chaffin. Both of those are spelled with a Y. You can find my personal blog at GeekTales. And our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us. And that's all for this week.
You know, and I never pimp my personal blog.
You should do that.
Hey, everyone, go to freshbrewedtales.com.
Funny stuff. Sad stuff sometimes.
Sad sometimes, yeah. And stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.